When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And today I'm going to talk about the arrival of the Red Army in the capitals of Eastern Europe in 1945. And principally, we're talking about Warsaw, Budapest, Prague, Berlin, and also Vienna. Often the historiography of this period of time focuses on the period from the sort of end of April onwards, following the death of Hitler on the 30th of April 1945, and the establishment of a military occupation of the eastern portion of Germany. But it should be remembered that the Red Army had marched as far as Silesia in Poland, Upper Silesia in Poland, by January 1945, and had on January the 27th that year had brought about the liberation of the Auschwitz camp system. So today I'm reading from Iron Curtain by Anne Applebaum. She wrote an excellent history of the Gulag system and a slightly more contentious history of the Soviet famines recently that has come under fire by some of the kind of more established people in that field of scholarship. By the way, if that's something you're interested in, hop back, I think, two podcasts, and I've started to look at Robert Conquest's History of the Soviet Famines. She writes, "The final Soviet offensive began in January 1945, when the Red Army crossed the Vistula, the river which runs through the centre of Poland. Quickly marching through the devastated western Poland and the Baltic states, the Ivans had conquered Budapest after a terrible siege by the middle of February, Silesia in March, and their assault on Königsberg in East Prussia ended in April. By that time, two vast army groups, the 1st Belorussian Front and the 1st Ukrainian Front, were on the outskirts of Berlin, poised for the final assault. Hitler killed himself on the 30th of April. A week later, on the 7th of May, General Alfred Jodl unconditionally surrendered to the Allies in the name of the Wehrmacht High Command. Even now, it is not easy to assess what happened in Eastern Europe during those final 5 months of war, because not everyone remembers the events of those bloody months in the same way. In Soviet historiography, the last phase of the war is always portrayed unambiguously as a series of liberations. According to the standard narrative, Warsaw, Budapest, Prague, Vienna and Berlin were freed from the yoke of Nazi Germany. Triumph followed triumph. The fascists were destroyed. The population rejoiced and freedom was restored." Of course, this is a highly selective and almost fantastical version of events. The idea that freedom was restored to any of these places is obviously a nonsense. The individuals living through these times told obviously a very different story. Germans throughout many of the post-war decades, really up until perhaps the 1990s, spoke very little of the events of May 1945, where essentially their entire world collapsed. Not only did the world of Nazism fall apart, but what little remained of German civil society collapsed, and the waves of arbitrary violence, looting, and above all things, the mass rapes of hundreds of thousands of German women, perhaps even up to a million German women, occurred. The Soviets, for their own purposes, obviously suppressed the memory of the Red Army's sexual violence, and later, as this story emerged, tried to present it in a kind of a more relative context of saying that this was sort of men at war. However, while sexual violence was a feature of all Allied armies, and Axis armies, of course, the figures for the Soviet Union stand out vastly, vastly higher than any other perpetrator. In other parts of Eastern Europe, the Red Army was famed or infamous for its suppression of the very partisans who had supposedly been allied with it, from the Ukraine and Belarus to the Baltic states and Poland. Guerrilla wars against the new occupiers continued into the late 1940s in some cases, and eventually the Soviet Red Army with local collaborators wound up destroying what resistance remained. These partisans who had been initially fighting the Germans, but in many cases weren't communists, or if they were communists, weren't communists quite of the variety that Stalin preferred, were destroyed. There were waves of violence that followed in all occupied countries: Poland, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Germany, Romania, and Bulgaria. And the waves of mass arrests that occurred enabled future Soviet control to become far more easily kind of enforced. So the citizens, many citizens of these new countries, if they did view the Soviets as liberators, this was very, very short-lived. However, there were individuals, mainly those who had been the most persecuted victims of Nazism, for whom the arrival of the Red Army was a kind of a moment of freedom. In his memoirs, If This Is a Man and The Drowned and the Saved, Primo Levi spoke very highly of the treatment he received, the medical care he received, and the food he received from the Red Army when they arrived at Auschwitz. Anne Applebaum writes, "For many, neither of these opposing perspectives, the perspectives of liberation or suppression, offers the complete story either. For the arrival of the Red Army really did herald freedom for millions of people. Soviet soldiers opened the gates of Auschwitz-Birkenau, Majdanek, Stutthof, Sachsenhausen and Ravensbrück. They emptied the Gestapo prisons. They made it possible for Jews to leave their hiding places in barns and cellars and to return slowly to something resembling ordinary life. Genya Zonnebend, a Jewish internee, walked out of the gates of a small labour camp in eastern Germany and went to the first German houses she could find asking for food. She was refused until a Russian passing by heard her story and made sure she received food and, as she was remembered, even warm water to wash." That said, the camps in question were often not demolished but kept open because the Soviets knew that they would serve a useful purpose in the not-too-distant future, when establishing regimes in East Germany would require them to be filled with a whole new raft of political prisoners. Another consequence or effect of this liberation, we'll use that word in a number of different ways, was the end of, obviously, Nazi racial policies and the attempt at kind of Nazi enforcement of the social and racial segregation of Poles. In occupied Poland, when the Red Army arrived, in the western part where the Poles had been forced to abandon their own language, signs saying for Germans only were torn down from shops and public amenities and trolley cars, and the Polish cities that had once been rechristened with German names were reverted back to their original Polish Polish names. When the Red Army marched into Germany, prisons that had been full of the Nazis' political opponents were scenes of jubilation. It was feared in some cases that the SS would simply execute all the prisoners, all the political prisoners of the regime, to prevent the Red Army from liberating them. This occurred in some instances, but overall there were a sufficient number of survivors, who many of whom were able to become politically active and participants in the new regime that the Soviets were going to build. There were some political prisoners of the Nazis who did not have sufficiently Stalinist credentials, who were promptly rearrested by the Soviets when the waves of political commissars and secret policemen marched into Germany behind the Red Army. And there were Czechs and Hungarians and other occupied Eastern Europeans who genuinely referred to and thought of the Soviets as liberators. These were populations who had been on the receiving end of appalling German brutality. One only needs to think of the fate of the village of Lidice in Czechoslovakia to have an idea of what German occupation was like. The liberation that the Poles, Hungarians and Czechs enjoyed was one that was mixed with appalling devastation and destruction. Now, this was not confined to the Eastern Front. The liberation of France from D-Day onwards resulted in the deaths of tens of thousands of French citizens, the bombing of the city of Cannes, for example, or simply the mass naval bombardments that were required to establish a beachhead in Normandy. Civilians are all killed in this process, and as the Allies marched across the French countryside, there was a mounting resentment towards the British and the French, British and the Americans, I beg your pardon, and a suspicion on the part of American and British soldiers that the French countryside was in some way in cahoots with the Nazis.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Obviously, this was not the case. In some of the contemporary accounts of the time, the Red Army that was often made up of Siberian and Kazakh soldiers from the Russian Far East. There were Korean soldiers in the Red Army. There is a sort of an undercurrent of racism towards the presence of these Asian people in the heart of Central and Eastern Europe. They're often referred to as looking darker, looking less clearly European. And there are frequent references to the Mongol hordes of Genghis Khan. And, you know, articulated here are these deep-seated anxieties that had existed since the Middle Ages about the great threat from the East. And they manifest themselves in this sort of rhetoric. And what the Soviets find, what ordinary Red Army soldiers find, even in war-devastated and occupied Eastern Europe, are standards of living that are far, far higher than anything they themselves had ever experienced. They are stunned when they look at the people who had been occupied by the Nazis, and these oppressed people they were liberating, were, on balance, enjoying better standards of living than they had ever known. There are interesting parallels with the march of Russian soldiers into Paris in 1814. The poet Glinka wrote of how extraordinary it was to imagine that they had defeated such an advanced and sophisticated and civilized and technologically advanced country. The Soviet Red Army soldiers had been told that they were marching from an advanced industrial country that had been liberated by socialism into the horrors of capitalism, into a place where they would see abject poverty and unemployment and suffering. However, when they discovered parts of the very poorest corners of Eastern Europe, when they discovered other peasants, who had not suffered collectivization, who had not suffered Stalin's agricultural policies, who owned small bits of land, who owned a few livestock, chickens or maybe goats or sheep, and they found people who had a small amount of material wealth, say, for example, a fine suit or a wristwatch or an old iron bed. These were things that in the Soviet Union had become increasingly rare. The people that would have had them had been the wealthier peasants, the kulaks, who had been expropriated by the state and by their poorer neighbours. Many Soviet soldiers were baffled as to why on earth the Germans, and Austrians would have invaded the Soviet Union in the first place. What is it possibly, many questioned, that the occupying forces of the Wehrmacht felt that they could have extracted from the Soviet Union, given that they already had such high living standards in the first place? Anne Applebaum writes that one political officer seemed to have the answer. He wrote back to Moscow explaining that this is a kulak agriculture based on the exploitation of labour. That is why everything looks so nice and rich. And when our Red Army soldier, particularly one who is immature in the political sense, with a petty bourgeois private ownership view, compares involuntarily a collective farm with a German farm, he praises the German farm. We even have some officers who admire German things. It's obvious from everything we see that Hitler robbed the whole of Europe to please his blood-stained Fritzes, another soldier wrote. Their sheep are the best Russian merinos, and their shops are piled with goods from shops and factories of the shops and factories of Europe. In the near future, these goods will appear in Russian shops as our trophies. Now, in there is a huge amount of really, really interesting stuff. The fact that the first soldier equated the living conditions of Nazi Germany with an illusion created by a kind of a kulak system, a system of wealthy peasants exploiting poorer peasants, is what he means. Really says almost nothing about Nazi Germany, of which there was no such kind of direct comparison. But it says everything about how that Soviet officer had seen the class struggles ongoing in the Soviet Union itself. And had seen the in his political view, the importance and the relevance of the destruction of the kulaks. And he says, everything looks nice and rich, but it's really a kind of a facade. The second point there is that, and there is a kernel of truth to this one, that Germany had plundered and looted the rest of Europe. And that the shops were piled high with goods from other European countries. To some extent, there's an element of truth in that. At least the German economy had benefited immensely from looting the rest of Europe. But the final point I think is really interesting, is that in the near future, these goods will appear in Russian shops as our trophies. And this, finally, is the real mentality of Red Army soldiers as they march into Germany, that they were there really to take tribute, to take trophies, and that the German economy would be looted and plundered and the goods returned to the Soviet Union. So every luxury you can imagine, from alcohol to furniture, the Red Army soldiers seem to be obsessed with watches with this portable signifier of wealth and success. Linen, bicycles, crockery. There was a huge kind of flow of consumer and material goods back to the Soviet Union. This was done largely kind of individually by Soviet soldiers. But there was a more systemic state looting of Germany by the Soviet Union, which is agreed at the Potsdam Conference. So the story goes that the iconic photograph of the Russian soldier raising the Soviet flag over the Reichstag had to be airbrushed, because on the arms of the young hero were dozens of stolen wristwatches. There's an interesting observation from Vasily Grossman, the famous Red Army war correspondent, who later got on the wrong side of Stalin. He wrote that the Red Army seemed to change when it crossed the Soviet border. When it ceased to be an army of liberation, liberating Soviet territory, and became an army of conquest beyond the borders of the Soviet Union. There was a kind of observable psychical change amongst Soviet soldiers. He recalled that one night he slept in a German house along with several other Russian soldiers, including a majestic colonel with a good Russian face, who was so tired he seemed ready to collapse. All night we hear noises coming from the room where the tired colonel is staying. He leaves in the morning without saying goodbye. We go to the room. Chaos. The colonel has emptied the cupboards like a real looter. The low living standards of so many Soviet soldiers marching into the relative abundance of war-torn European, Central and Eastern European countries, combined with the traumas of 4 years of continual fighting and almost unimaginable losses on the Soviet side, and the fact that had the war gone the other way, the Red Army would have faced, the Soviet peoples would have faced a racial annihilation. Combined with the fact that Soviet soldiers had been killed en masse, left to starve to death, and many of whom in their final days and hours had resorted to cannibalism to survive, meant that the Soviet soldiers who had arrived in Germany were almost guaranteed to behave in violent, antisocial ways, and the wave of sexual violence that was partly encouraged by the regime, and then finally, after a period of about 12 months, finally frowned upon and threatened with official sanction. These are all the kind of the appalling, hideous and terrible consequences of prolonged periods of mass human violence. And it is, in many ways, the result of and the consequence and the responsibility of Hitler's decision, ill-fated decision to invade the Soviet Union, and his belief that the German people would never face the consequences of a defeat that he believed was inconceivable. So we'll continue with this a little bit later in the week. We're going to work through some more things on the Red Army in Germany. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good day, enjoy, and if you can pop by our Patreon page at any point, that would be very, very helpful. All the best, thanks, bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.